There are relative values and absolute values. Really? We didn't know there were two kinds of values. There are relative and absolute. What do we mean by relative value and what do we mean by absolute value? Say I go to the bookstore and buy a book that's worth $20. So I pay $20 for that book. Or say if it's a medical or a technical or an engineering book, I pay $70 or $80 for that book. But I pay $20 or I pay $80 because I know the value of the book is more than that. If I'm buying a medical or an engineering book, I'm paying $80. But the knowledge I get from that of medicine or engineering or law or science is worth a lot more than $80. So in my mind, even though I have paid $80 for that technical book, for me, that knowledge is invaluable. It's $200, $300. But for the bookseller, because he has paid $50 to the publisher to buy the book, and so he sells it to me for $80, for him, the value of the book is $30. Why? Because he paid $50 and he's making a $30 profit. So the relative value of that book in my mind is maybe $200. In his mind, it is $30. And most of the transactions in the world depend on relative values. I make a product, I manufacture it in the factory. It costs me $10 to make. I sell it to the wholesaler for $15. He sells it to the retailer for $25, who then sells it to the customer for $40. So all transactions, I build a house, the builder builds a house. You know, it costs him $100,000, but then he sells it to the buyer for $150 or $200. So all transactions in the world depend on relative values. And these change, you know, depending on whether you are the buyer or you are the seller and what are you doing. But then in life, we have absolute values, which do not change, which do not depend on whether you are practicing or who is practicing or where they are practicing. They do not change. Not only that, but the absolute value, you cannot put a monetary price on it. Like, what is the value of love? Can you quantify love? How much does love cost? Or sincerity, or honesty, or truth, or justice, or sacrifice. These values are absolute. They were there even in time immemorial, even at the time of Jesus, even at the time of Buddha, at the time of the Upanishads, several thousand years ago. These values were absolute. They do not change. They do not change, even though people say, nowadays, you know, honesty has no meaning. But truly, honesty, truthfulness, justice has as much meaning today as it did 8,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago when the Upanishads were written. And it cannot be quantified. You cannot put a price tag on it. Though sometimes we do, like love. Sometimes we make it into a business. You know, I love him. Why? Because he loves me back. Or I love him because he can provide me security. Or I love her because she can give me this or that. So when you make these values into a business, then you are cheapening them. Then you are reducing it. Whether it's love or whether it's sincerity or whether it's sacrifice or whether it's helpfulness or unselfishness, they have to be practiced not as an exchange, not as a business. I love the person regardless of what I can get from that person. I practice honesty and sincerity no matter what the circumstances. Whether some people say they are honest and sincere as long as somebody is watching. The moment there is no police, the moment there is no... their honesty, sincerity goes up. So that is not absolute. Then you are practicing values as a relative value. So true value, when you practice at all times, in all situations, with all people, regardless of how they deal back with you. That's what all the saints teach us. Look at the life of Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya or Tukaram or Narasimha Mehta or Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda. They practice these values to the nth degree, regardless of how much the person may have hurt them, how much the person may have. So that is the difference between a relative value and an absolute value. And in the 16th chapter, Sri Krishna, in the first three verses, gives us 26 absolute values, which he says should be practiced at all times. You say, oh, 26 is very difficult. No doubt, it is difficult to practice all 26 at all times in all situations. And that is what distinguishes us from a saint. But what we have to do is we have to read this. That's why I recommend everybody should get this book, this 18 volumes, and read them, because Gurudev's commentary is very clear. And let us consciously try to develop as many values as we can. Like we said before, practice one value a day. And so for 1 month, 26 values, and then next month you start all over again, and slowly you will find that they will become a part of your life. So the more you become conscious that do I have ahimsa? You know, do I have non-violence truly? Am I non-violent in my speech? Am I non-violent in my thoughts? Am I non-violent in my actions? So as you look within, you will find that to greater or lesser extent, we have these values. All we have to do is become conscious about it and actively cultivate it. Then only the benefit of the Gita will come. Then only studying the Gita will be helpful when we can actually apply these values in our life. So in the last few weeks, we have done 20 values in the first two verses. And I won't go over them all over again, because 20 values, just to repeat, doesn't make sense. You have to go into detail. So you can read the commentary from Gurudev. So today we'll do the remaining six. There are 26 values that Bhagavan Sri Krishna has given us to practice. So today we'll cover six values. And then next week we will start the other, the devilish qualities. These are the divine qualities, what he calls as Devi Sampad. That's what Sri Krishna calls the 26 values. And then the rest of the chapter, he talks about the devilish qualities, or the qualities that are not divine. So verse number 3. Teja kshama dhriti shaucham.
Teja kshama dhriti shaucham.
Adroho nati manita.
Adroho nati manita.
Bhavanti sampadam daivim.
Bhavanti sampadam daivim.
Abhijatasya Bharata.
Abhijatasya Bharata.
So the six values we are covering today, one is Tejaha. Tejaha is brilliance. Brilliance. Kshama. Kshama in most languages, even in Hindi, is translated as forgiveness. But in this context, Gurudev has talked about patience. Kshama also means patience in Sanskrit. Forgiveness is also there. We'll cover that later on. But mostly today we'll be talking about patience. Dhriti. Dhriti is fortitude. To be undisturbed in all situations and to be firmly established in the goal. Dhriti. Shaucham. Shaucham is purity. Purity, cleanliness is shaucham. Adroha. Adroha is no hatred, no revengefulness. Na ati manita. Na ati manita. Ati manita means over pride, being excessively proud about one's abilities, being arrogant. Na ati manita means lack of arrogance, lack of excessive pride. So we'll cover each value in some detail. So teja is brilliance. Now, brilliance we think about as physical, when somebody looks very beautiful and it's all this makeup and shining and there's a lot of jewelry and beautiful clothes and she's, you know, shining. That's we think as brilliant, tejas. But Gurudev says that the true tejas is not external, it is internal. Or another idea we have, another concept we have, that a realized master should have this halo around. And in all the pictures of the gods, if you see Krishna or Vishnu or Ganpati or whatever, they see this halo around it. And even around the realized masters, when they draw the pictures, they show them with a halo. And we say, this guy doesn't have a halo. I don't think he's realized. So in our eyes, brilliance means it's something that you should see. It should be shining. It should be effulgent. Then only this is, it impresses us. If somebody walks ordinarily and, you know, doesn't look very impressive, they say, he cannot be a realized master. You know, he should have some. But Gurudev says that true brilliance is internal, is not external. True glory is what the person is within, not what the person is without. So you should be able to, from his speech, from his actions, from his behavior, see that this person is brilliant. So like they say, how do you know that light travels faster than sound? How do you know that light travels faster than sound? They say a person may look very intelligent, but when he opens his mouth, then you know what he is. So light travels faster than sound. So to really, truly recognize a person's brilliance, you have to see his behavior, his character. And Gurudev very beautifully talks about what is brilliance. I'll just read his, because I cannot do as big, beautiful job in the description of a brilliant individual. He says, what is a brilliant individual? He says, the brilliancy of his intellect, the twinkling joy in his eyes, the thrilling fragrance of peace around, the serene poise in his activities, the dalliance of his love for all, the light of joy that ever shines forth from the innermost depth of his beings, this is what constitutes the personality of a sage who with abundant energy serves all. So what should he have? He should have a brilliant intellect. His joy should be twinkling. His eyes should be twinkling with joy. There should be peace around him. When you sit next to a wise person, you feel so much peace. His activities, he is very serene. He's doing all his activities without agitation, without disturbance, peacefully. He's doing everything beautifully. At the same time, he has love for all. And there is a light of joy shining from within. So that is true brilliance. And such a sage or such a saint with abundant energy serves all. So these are the qualities of true brilliance. And this is what you and I should try to develop within us. That this quality of inner peace, the inner silence, the inner bliss, the inner joy. And such an individual alone can be brilliant, can shine. Like the example they give is like if you have a lamp and at the inside there is a container and you put, you know, whatever the fuel is, and then you have the wick going and then the lamp shines. Suppose you put something very light like petrol, like gasoline. What happens? Instantly it lights and disappears. Within a few seconds it burns off. But you put something like oil. Oh, oil may last an hour, 2 hours. But if you put something thick like ghee, you know, ghee is clarified butter that, you know, we use in India for all our rituals. Now, ghee is thick, and that a ghee there will last for several hours. Why? Because ghee is thick. It is more solid as opposed to petrol, which is very flimsy. So similarly, when a wise person works in the world, he works from inner strength, from inner fullness, from inner thickness, from inner stability, like ghee, as opposed to gasoline, which is flaky, which is very quickly disappears. So the point is that true tejas comes from inner strength. When I have practiced these other values that we have been studying about, when we practice these other values, then we get an inner strength, we get an inner stability. And when such an individual works in the world, we find that his activities are brilliant, they're full of tejas, they're full of light, and such an individual is said to be a successful individual. But what is the main quality? You should love your work. unless you enjoy or love what you are doing, your activities will not be brilliant. Your activities will not be successful. So what we find in the world, that there are some people who are very good in one activity. They may be very successful at work, you know, are brilliant. But when they come home, they are totally useless at home. They are very poor in interpersonal relationships with their wife, with their children. Only one thing they are brilliant in. No, a truly brilliant individual is good at whatever he or she does, no matter what he does. This reminds me of Gurudev. There's a very beautiful story about him, Swami Chinmayananda. He believed that whatever has to be done very well. One does not do anything half-heartedly. And one time people were mailing out, you know, these flyers for some talk. And they were just sticking the stamps and this thing and writing the address. And he said, "What are you guys doing? What, Gurudev, we are sending out, this is not the way. Let me show you." So he took an envelope. He wrote exactly in the middle of the envelope. The stamp was exactly in the corner, not, you know, not crooked, not teda, not side, exactly in the corner. The address, return address, exact, and had to be straight, and had to be, and he showed them. He did about 10 envelopes. He said, "Anything that goes out from Chinmaya Mission has to be precise, has to be correct. You cannot just haphazardly just put a stamp anywhere and put an address anywhere and write anything." No. That's how he was. Every activity that he did, he said, if you do it, you do it well. Otherwise, don't do it. And what we find is very interesting in the Chinmaya Mission when we deal with people, it's very interesting. When it comes to their personal work, you know, if they are doing a personal work like planning a trip or planning a party or doing something or decorating their house, they will spend months and years perfectly planned. But when they come to doing voluntary work, then it's okay, chalta hai, you know, in 2-3 weeks, they will try to quickly finish it. Personal work, they will spend months and years. But what Gurudev used to say, that whatever you do should be done with the same enthusiasm. If you are doing volunteer, in fact, I feel that volunteer work should be done with more enthusiasm because you are doing God's work. You are doing work for the community. Personal work, I'm only doing for me and myself. But our thinking is so opposite. And that is the problem. That is why the work does not shine, because we do not have the inspiration. If you are truly doing God's work, or if you are truly helping the community, you should do it with more enthusiasm than my personal party. If I'm planning an event for the mission or for the church or for the community, I should put more effort than if I'm doing my personal. So that is called tejas. That is called brilliance. But this individual works equally, regardless of the situation, puts his 100%. So this is a very beautiful interpretation of the brilliance. Next, we shall talk about kshama. As we said, kshama talks, some people translate as forgiveness. But forgiveness I'll do when I talk about adroha, no hatred. So I won't detail that. In kshama, mostly kshama in Sanskrit also means patience. And a typical example, if you want to see patience, is how, see how a mother deals with her son, you know, with her child who is 3, 4, 5 years old, running around and hyper. And she very patiently deals with him and tells him, "Sit down, beta," and, you know, "We'll sit down and feed him, and sit down and teach him, and sit down and give him a bath or clothe him." So true patience is where you take your time. You're not in a hurry. You say, "Yes, let the child settle down, and then I will feed him, then I will teach him, then I will help him." And we find that in the world, anything that you have to succeed takes time. Like if you want to study a new language, can you do it in a day? No. I actually, a few years back, started studying Spanish. And I thought I could do it in 2 or 3 months. And believe me, it was one of the hardest things I did. It took me 6 months of daily hard work, constantly from morning to night, listening to tapes in my car, trying to talk to people, read Spanish, think Spanish. At night, I used to read Spanish books. In 6 months, I was able to just have able to communicate some simple sentences. It's very hard. And it took me a year of really, really hard work to where I could become reasonably fluent, where I could speak Spanish. And now I can, you know, speak to my patients and I don't need an interpreter. So 1 year of hard work. So the point is that anything that you do well takes time. That's why medical college takes 13 years, or engineering college, or any pharmacy school, anything from 8 to 10 to 12 to 13 years. Why? Because anything that you need to learn takes time. So patience is a very, very important quality that we need to develop. And we should be patient with people, because what we do is that we have imperfections within us. And we are very patient with ourselves. It's okay. You know, everybody has these. You know, when I make a mistake, it's okay. Everybody gets angry. It's okay. Everybody has problems. But when somebody else has the same quality, if he gets anger or if he does something wrong, we have absolutely no patience with others. We start yelling at them, we start shouting at them, we get angry, we get upset. So just as I'm patient with myself, or say with my child, I should be patient with all people and everybody's children and all that. Why? Because imperfections everybody has. If I was perfect, then I would be God. You know, whoever is perfect is absolute. God is the only thing that is perfect in this world. Everybody has imperfections. I have, you have, he has, she has. So one should be accepting of others' imperfections, be tolerant of, as we had even talked last week. If you want to correct somebody, you know, even if they have, do it in private, do it with gentleness, but be patient, be accepting, be, and also when you are doing some activity, do not get impatient if you don't succeed. Now, I do it one time, I don't succeed. I do it two times, I don't succeed. Have the patience, the ability to keep on doing it. Why? Because it comes from within. When I do something, I feel that I have to do well, I have to succeed. So learning comes from within. Success comes when the drive is internal, not external, not somebody else telling me to do it. Then I won't. But if I have the inner drive, the inner, then I will have patience. So 100 times I succeed, 101st time. Talking about internal or external drive reminds me of a story. There was this, people were standing around a well, and this child was playing, and he fell in the well. And everybody gathered, oh, the child is fallen. You know, who's going to go get him? We don't know how deep the well is. Everybody was standing around. Nobody was doing anything to save the child. And suddenly one man jumped inside. And he jumped in and they said, oh gosh, he's so brave. He jumped in the well and then he caught the child. And then somebody threw him a rope. And so he caught the rope and he grabbed onto the rope and the child with the other hand. And with effort, they pulled him up and they said, oh, you are such a great man. You've done such a great job. You are so brave. You are so wonderful. You saved him, the child, and he was lying down, and the child, and they were both out of breath, you know, because of in the water. And after 30 seconds or 1 minute, he caught his breath, and they said, you know, you are so brave. He said, what brave? I want to know who pushed me inside. So that was not internal bravery. That was external. Somebody pushed him, and so he had no choice. So, but truly, when if I have that inner drive, then I would jump and I would save. So that is called kshama, patience, where I'm patient with myself and I am patient with others, especially those who depend upon me. So that is kshama. Next is dhriti. Dhriti is fortitude. Dhriti comes from the Sanskrit word dhri. Dhri, the root is dhri, which means which sustains, which is stable, which is firm. So true dhriti is fortitude in all situations, in all situations, because in life problems will come to everybody, and a person who has dhriti, who has fortitude, continues to work with that same enthusiasm and does not let problems deter him or deter her. And what we find in most of us that we keep doing it for a while, and then when the first sign of problems comes, you say, I can't do it, forget it. And Gurudev says, sometimes you may be on the verge of success. If you had just continued a little bit more, you would have succeeded. But we say, it's too difficult. And so we give up, whether it's climbing a mountain, or whether it's starting a business, whether it's doing a job, or whether it's taking up a project. So dhriti is that in life you will have problems, as we have talked before. You may have physical problems. You know, you may have ill health, you may have some physical distress, or mentally you may get disturbed, or somebody may criticize you, or intellectually you may meet with failure. So whether I am fail or succeed one time, whether somebody appreciates me or criticizes me, whether somebody loves me or praises me or blames me, even when I have physical problems come to everybody. That's what they say. In this life, nobody has perfect. Kabhi kisi ko mukammal jahan nahi milta. That's a very famous ghazal in Umrao Jaan, that nobody's life is perfect. And if nothing else, eventually your body will catch up. Even if it's mentally and intellectually, you may be doing fine, but sooner or later, your body will stop. It's, you know, it's an engine. It's not going to work forever. 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, how long will you escape? Sooner or later. So the body will give you problems. You will have back problems. You will have knee problems. You will have health problems. It's okay. But a wise person says, my goal is clear. And again, Gurudev talks very beautifully. I love to quote him. His English is masterful. So he says, the strength of faith, conviction of the goal, consistency of purpose, vivid perception of the ideal, and a bold spirit of sacrifice cultivated diligently, all these form the source from which fortitude comes, removes exhaustion, fatigue, and despair. So what does the person who is on the goal, he has, first of all, he has strength of faith. He has faith in his goal because his teacher has told him, the scriptures have told him, his guru has told him that there is a higher purpose in life, or faith in his abilities that I have started this project and I will do it. God is with me as long as my goal is clear. It could be a worldly project or could be a spiritual goal. So strength of faith and then conviction. What he does is he researches and makes sure that the goal which he has is legitimate, is honest, is sincere, and is appropriate. Once he is convinced that this is my goal, this is my purpose in life, as I said, from the knowledge obtained from the scriptures, from his teacher, or from the worldly knowledge, once he is convinced of his goal, then he says, okay, I am convinced, I have faith, and nobody can stop me. Then he says consistency of purpose. And now once he has faith, once he has a goal clear, then he is consistent. He does not waver. You know, our enthusiasm, one day in the beginning, we are very enthusiastic. And then slowly, slowly, the enthusiasm goes down. And from the moment we meet obstacle, and it's okay, you know, it's okay. If I can't do it today, maybe I'll do it next month. Or maybe I'll do it next year. Ho jayega, nahi hoga, toh it's okay. Kya fayda? So that kind of, you know, consistency you and I, we lack. But a wise person, when he or she's goal is clear, then they are consistent. Nothing can stop them. Gurudev met so many obstacles in his life. Jesus met so many obstacles. Look at Tukaram's life. Look at Mirabai's life. Full of problems. Full of obstacles. Full of difficulties. Look at Sant Gyaneshwar. My God, if you see the problems that he and his family had, you know, they were outcast by the whole community. They were, nobody used to talk to them. Nobody would even invite them. Nobody would even share water with them. And still, their whole family became great saints. Not only Gyaneshwar, but his sister, his brother. They were all tremendously elevated. Their parents died at a very young age. The brother and sisters, they were five siblings, I think. And they were just like orphans. Nobody even dealt with them. And yet they became such great saints. Look at their teachings. Look at their commentary. Consistent. It does not matter how many people are against me, as long as my goal is clear. Then the other is vivid perception of the ideal. They have an ideal and they have clearly visualized that this is my ideal, this is my goal. It's not a what they call a pajama personality. You know, you and I, we have a pajama personality, Dheela Dhala, you know, these white pajamas. It just shakes from side to side and all. No, not like that. Clear ideal, clear goal, and I will pursue that. So their ideal, they know what their ideal is. And again, their ideal comes from seeing others who have succeeded. If it's my spiritual goal, then I look at the example of, you know, Swami Chinmayananda or Shankaracharya or Jesus. If it's my social goal, then I look at Mahatma Gandhi, I look at Martin Luther King, or I look at John F. Kennedy. If it's a physical goal, physicist, then I look at the life of Einstein and Oppenheimer. You know, so similar, if I'm medicine, then I look at the life of Madame Curie and, you know, Hippocrates and how they set an ideal. So once my ideal is clear to me, then that person has dhriti. And then it is called a bold spirit of sacrifice cultivated diligently. Then such a person is ready to sacrifice anything. His physical health, his emotional well-being. He says, look, I want to succeed and nothing can stop me. Even that if I have to sacrifice my body, if I have to sacrifice my comfort. Like, you know, people who fight for the freedom of the country. You know, we look at our freedom fighters and those who fought for freedom for America, for the British, how they sacrificed. They stayed in the forest. They stayed hidden. They even went to Bhagat Singh and his, you know, followers. They were hanged. They said, it's okay. We don't mind. For Bharat Mata ke liye, I'm ready to even be hanged. So that ability even to sacrifice one's life for one's goal is called dhriti. And that is called being persistent. There's a very famous story in Gurudev's life. There was this man who came to him and he bowed down at his feet. He fell, sashtang, namaskar, lay down. Gurudev, I've come to you and I'm looking for peace. So Gurudev says, oh good, come. So what do you want? He says, Gurudev, for 20 years I have been searching for a true guru and I haven't found it, but looks like now in your ashram I have found. So Gurudev says, 20 years? He says, yes, Gurudev, I went to Haridwar, I went to Rishikesh, I went to Varanasi, I met different gurus. And what did you do with them? Some I stayed 2 years, some I stayed 3 years. I didn't like any of them. Everybody had problems. But now I'm convinced after 20 years, this is the place for me. So Gurudev says, stay here a few days, you will find problems here too. You know, because a person who has gone 20 years and has not found a guru and is finding problems with all spiritual, he's not going to be happy here. He said, he could judge what the person was. He said, after a few days, you'll be leaving from here too. There are a lot of problems in. So, you know, so the point is that a person who cannot stay in one place, some people cannot stay in one job, you know, every 2-3 years. I remember there was an anesthesiologist who was my classmate. And in the last 20 or 30 years, he has stayed in 8 or 10 different cities, you know, from Reno to Las Vegas to Palm Springs to any city in California and around he has stayed. He's somewhere 2 years, somewhere 3 years. And so he never settled. So he never becomes successful. I asked him, what happened? Oh, that place, there was this problem. That place, my boss. You know, that is the problem. There is no dhriti. There is no consistency. And unless you have that consistency, you won't succeed. So they say dhriti, you have to see a mother in pregnancy, how much she goes through, you know, throughout the 9 months, how much discomfort. And then at the time of delivery, how much. Why? Because she wants to bring this beautiful life into the world. So that is called true dhriti. That's why most of these qualities are feminine. Look at dhriti, look at kshama, look at ahimsa, look at vidya. Lot of these qualities are feminine because in feminine you see these qualities more strongly than in males. So that's why they say practice dhriti, practice fortitude in all situations at all times, and then you will truly progress, truly evolve. I'll take a break here. If anybody has any comments or any questions, we have done three values and we'll do three more. Yes.
You said these are the that becomes maybe the king or the hero. So isn't the truth cannot be absolute?
No, but I think for in his own mind, how he perceives it, you know, that's what I said. It does not matter how the world perceives, but how he perceives himself. So these values are for me to judge myself, individual, that am I doing it for a selfish purpose, or am I doing it so I become famous, or am I doing it for the benefit of the country? So I think the values depend on the individual, not on how the world judges. We'll talk about that. No matter, even the purest person will have criticism, will have enemies. So just because somebody criticizes or somebody judges him differently does not change. Ultimately, he has to be honest to his own convictions, because God is within him, and is he true to his faith? Is he true to what he truly believes in? And if that is the case, if people judge him differently, that's not his issue. As long as his motive is clear. See, what is important is what is my motive? What is driving me to do it? And if your motive is pure, not hatred, not arrogance, not fame, but true service, then it doesn't matter how history judges him.
Not universal. I mean, it's just right, an individual person. But still, truth to be absolute value, therefore I'm trying to explain myself.
Right. No, you're right. But again, the way I look at it is that, yes, but they are also convinced that they are right. Ultimately, there is the higher judge. You know, let him judge what they're doing is right or wrong. If the person truly believes that he's doing the right thing, then we don't know, you know, what will happen. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, how I view it, as long as I'm true to what my guru has taught, what the Gita has taught, if I can practice that to 100%, then that is for me the truth. But you're right. It sometimes can be a lot of shades of gray, you know, But that's a good point. Thank you.
How does he have to handle the karma part?
No, I agree. I think, it's very difficult in that kind of a situation. You know, like this, the child from Taft, you know, Oliver, he finally was bullied so much that he took a gun and he killed one and hurt the other one or something. I think... where if you are constantly, you know, one is that you forgive, you know, okay, I forgive you. Even the hatred is not there. But I think in that kind of a situation, he has to tell his parents, and the parents have to be proactive and talk to the school and talk to the counselors and talk to the principal. And if it doesn't change, even go to the higher district level or, you know, whatever. So... yeah, I mean, you know, you can't tolerate, you cannot have your child being constantly bullied, because that then it becomes a very unhealthy situation for the child. Either the child becomes depressed or stops going to school or his grades suffer. Yeah, so I think there one cannot just be, none of these values say that one has to become a doormat, that let people keep on picking on me. No, I have to stand up for my right without hatred, without anger. But yeah, there he has to maybe approach the counselor or his parents, rather than, I think, taking a gun and trying to shoot the bullies, because that's a wrong, because he ended up suffering, and, you know, so he ended up in jail and all that. But yeah, you feel compassion for such a child that he had to do that. And I think he was very harshly judged. You know, they gave him 18 years of jail or something. My opinion, 27 years. Yeah, I think to me that was very harsh. They should have looked at the reasons. I'm not saying that it justifies him taking a gun, but I think they wanted to make an example of him so that other people don't do that.
Then the trouble of the 27 years would even ruin him. How many of the inmates will come out clean?
No, you're right. And he actually, 27, he'll be out in about 8 or 10, 12 years. Then he's not going to serve 27 years. But you're right, but you know, that's how society is, you know.
If society would have done what it should be done, they would have done that.
Yeah, like that boy who committed suicide in Tehachapi. Yeah, there was a child who was bullied to the point where he committed suicide. You know, they used to keep calling him gay. Yeah, so I think That's where society fails, and you know, nothing is perfect. Neither is society perfect. We just can try our best. I mean, his parents should have been more active.
Shama becomes a very fine line.
Right.
Because, as you said, it becomes a right. fine line. Where do we draw a line?
I think nowhere it's Krishna never tells Arjuna to be a doormat. He doesn't say that let people walk all over you. He told him, he said, look, if they don't listen, you try to talk to them and they are still unreasonable, you need to pick up your bow and arrow and fight. And he tells him that at the end, that we have tried everything, but at the end, when it doesn't work, you have to fight for your rights. And so Gita doesn't teach us to be a passive, you know, let's let anybody walk over us. You deal with them patiently, you deal with them softly, but ultimately you have to take a stand, and there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think so. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.